thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.
In this episode of the Coach and Coordinator Podcast, I'm joined again by Iowa quarterback coach Ken O'Keefe as we discuss the quarterback's decision-making and footwork. Coach O'Keefe gives us some in-depth detail on how he coaches these areas, and we share ideas on what we want to see. We split this discussion into two parts for coaches to really lock in on these concepts. We start this two-part piece with decision-making. Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. I'm excited to be joined again today by a recent guest, the quarterback coach at Iowa, Ken O'Keefe. Coach O'Keefe, it's great to have you here again.
It's great to be back. I appreciate you guys having me on, and it was a lot of fun last time, and expect it to be a lot of fun again today.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, it was good to see you as well. I know we were both at the Glacier in Cleveland. We were actually talking at the same time, so I didn't get to go and sit in your room, but it was nice to see you there and meet your wife as well.
It was a great clinic again. Anytime you can get out, see a bunch of folks that love football, I can't find much, a much better thing to do on a Friday night for sure. And I had a few old teammates of mine from John Carroll that came over and sat in my talks, and that made it even more fun. And I'll tell you this: I sat in two sessions with Dub Maddox, and I was really impressed with how he teaches, how he teaches young quarterbacks, and has developed a system for them to, be able to read defenses and coverages and defenders and grade, really, really good job. Makes a ton of sense. And, if anybody's looking for a smart, simple way to help your QB, that system he uses, RX4 or whatever, I can't remember exactly what,
yeah.
R4,
right.
I'm gonna throw an X in there for whatever reason, because it's an excellent way to teach. How's that? but Dub's on to something. I had a lot of fun sitting in there listening to him teach, and boy, he gets it. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, it was fun. I sat in one of those sessions as well, right after an early one that I did, and I had heard a lot of his stuff. I actually went out, I think, must have been around 2010, went out to Jenks High School and spent a couple days with him, and have kept up with him from time to time. He's been on the podcast a few times, probably be on it here again soon, but his game planning stuff is phenomenal as well. He really took things, I thought, to the next level with what he was doing with R4, and then he applied that to the whole process of game planning, and it was mind-blowing the detail that he puts into things. So, great resource with Dub Maddox and his R4 system.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it.
Well, Coach, the last time we really dug into quarterback leadership and spent some time talking on that, and we agreed that we'd get back together, and I really wanted to dig in a little bit of one of the other things you mentioned, developing the mental side of quarterback play. So before we get into the specifics of that, I guess, when you're looking for a quarterback and you're evaluating these guys from all over the country, how are you evaluating whether that guy is a good decision maker or not?
Well, we talked about those things, last time, how, number one, you're looking for a competitor, a guy who loves to play the game of football, can't live without it. The second quality from a mental standpoint is you want a decision maker who's going to be able to, make, those great decisions and turn them into big plays on the football field. So when you're looking, at least when we're looking at, we're looking at high school quarterbacks, no matter what age they may be, we're always trying to measure production versus potential, because there are a lot of pretty throwers out there, obviously. Mm-hmm. And when you go to, watch guys work out, that's allowed by the NCAA to get out and see guys and, or you watch tape on people, it can be deceiving at times. One of the things that if you were to just take these two particular areas, I think that I'm going to talk about, you'll probably get a pretty good start on how productive a quarterback actually is. And, you know, whether you're on the recruiting end of it like we are, or you're in the drafting end like NFL, or if you've got, you know, two guys competing for the same, for the starting job in preseason or the off season, you know, as a high school coach, I think, you know, you can use these things to help yourself down the road. The really the first thing that tells you a little bit about what a quarterback is doing with his decision-making is going to be his passing percentage, right? You know, it's simple. Is he completing passes? What's the percentage that you feel in your offense that, you know, it makes him productive? You know, we like to see somebody that has, you know, 65% or more, you know, production coming, you know, coming out of high school. You know, we usually, and we did this in the NFL for sure, we usually will clip out and not include any bubble screens, you know, throws behind the line of scrimmage normally, because we want to see what his, you know, his true throwing progression is down the field. Quick game still involved, all the intermediate, play action, whatever, you know, but, you know, you can tell an awful lot about, you know, how many attempts a guy has and how many completions, you know, with those attempts. And, you know, and it's a little wild and crazy because, you know, we're looking at guys that are actually, you know, sophomores and freshmen at times, and they're just getting started. So you got to be smart about not, you know, not getting too crazy about it in the beginning. But, you know, as we move up the ladder here, we're going to take every game that this guy's played usually, and we're going to evaluate it from production standpoint. So we'll start with his passing percentage. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to go to the, you know, touchdown to interception ratio, you know, and we, you know, we like him to throw three touchdowns at least for every, you know, one interception he throws. And really, you know, when you go back and you look at these particular, you know, statistics, you know, are there red flags or aren't there, you know, depending on, you know, how you like him as a leader, as a, you know, as a, you know, as a player, his arm, you know, his arm may look great, but he can't always, you know, he can't always, you know, get the ball where it needs to go. But bottom line is those are the two places that usually tell you right away, a lot about a quarterback's ability to make decisions. And again, you know, whether you're evaluating him to recruit or to draft or evaluating them in a competitive situation, I think that can, you know, that can help you an awful lot. The next thing that we would look for would be his explosive plays. Now, how many passes has he completed that, you know, are 16 yards or more as far as gained, you know, gained yardage is concerned. So, you know, we want it to be plus 16 or more. And then, you know, even within there, you have to decide, okay, you know, you have to decide, you know, how many of them are run after catches, how many of them are intermediate down the field throws, you know, things along that, those lines, because, you know, that by itself is going to determine the kind of arm strength that you may have, you know, as well with the deep ball, and, you know, timing comes along with that as well. But again, explosive plays are going to matter. The next thing would be, what does he do with his feet? Can he scramble out of the pocket and make a first down? Okay. Can he scramble out of the, you know, can he move in the pocket enough to avoid rush and make a throw while he's still in the pocket, keep his eyes down the field? There, you know, there are really So we're looking for, you know, quick feet. That's really the first thing we're looking for from a physical standpoint. When we recruit a QB, we want somebody that has quick enough feet to take all the drops that we want, get, you know, get the depth he needs in the pocket, get his feet set. Okay. Then we want a quick release so he can get the ball out of his hands. That, you know, that does involve decision-making, anticipation, you know, and proper mechanics, obviously. You know, there's where you, you know, you're thinking more like, hey, you want a guy, you know, who's a catcher, type of guy that, you know, he just, you know, he gets that thing out and makes that throw to second, you know, immediately he's not on the mound. You don't want a guy who's winding up, you know, and taking a long time as far as his delivery is concerned to get the ball out, you know, out of his hands. And then, the, you know, the last thing, you know, we're looking for is arm strength too. And so, you know, when you go back, you know, when you go back to the explosive play, one measure of arm strength, and all we want from a guy is for his arm to be strong enough to make all the throws in our offense, right? I mean, you know, it's pretty logical statement there, you know, and if my daughter was listening to this and she was 10 years old, she'd say, duh, you know, but that's, yeah, of course, you know, but one of the ways you can measure arm strength as well is when you've got a guy running straight down the field, one of your receivers is running straight down the field, let's just say on the outside, down the sideline, wide open, and your quarterback comes up throwing, and he, on a regular basis, okay, is leaving the ball short. The receiver has to slow down, come back, catch it at its highest point, you know, anytime he has to slow down on a regular basis, to me now that becomes a concern as far as arm strength. There are two things that, you know, are going to cause that. Probably three, but two of them are critical. One is he just doesn't have the juice in his arm to get the ball there. Okay. Number two, he's not seeing the field real well. And his anticipation isn't great. And that can potentially be fixed, you know, and, you know, a guy like Dub Maddox has some really good ideas on how to fix that stuff, for high school guys. And then, you know, the other thing to me is kind of related to both having a feel and anticipation. It's going to be the quarterback's feet because, you know, when he's in rhythm and gets the ball out on time, you know, the ball should get where it should be unless his arm just isn't strong enough. You're asking him to do something that he's not capable of, then that's up to you as the coach to get that route depth fixed or whatever, you know, whatever it may be, or find a way to help him. Usually when our guys come up short on deep balls, it's because they took an extra, you know, hitch step or shuffle step up into the pocket, which made it a little bit late. Let the receiver, that allows the receiver to get downfield further. He sort of outruns the ball, but, you know, his feet are going to really be the determining factor there. So you then have to decide, hey, is it his arm or is it his feet? Is it his, you know, ability to make a decision because of his anticipation, you know, the clock that he has built in his head, you know, and we spend a lot of time trying to build that clock in the, in the quarterback's head. And, you know, every rep we watch in the pass game, we try to time as many of them as we can with a stopwatch in our, you know, in our quarterback room, from snap. And we take a lot of snaps under center still snap, even when they're in the gun, it's still from the snap to the release. And we really want that ball, okay, on timing routes versus zone, which is different than man to man, but we want that ball out of the quarterback's hands and on the way to that receiver in certain time increments, whether it's the quick game, five step, play action, whatever it may be. But the bottom line is if you can't, you know, if you can't measure that with a stop clock, a stopwatch, excuse me, that's not a problem. One of the things that you can look for is, has the ball been released? And is the ball a third of the way to the receiver before he comes out of his break and turns his head? If your quarterback can make that throw and the ball is a third of the way there when that receiver comes out of his route, you're going to have a great chance to make a completion as long as the ball is located correctly, put where it's supposed to be. Okay. If your guys get so good at it, okay, that ball's halfway there, it becomes almost impossible to defend. So those are little things you can look for while you're watching the tape as well to see, you know, where that ball is on the way to the receiver. Now, look, it all bets are off to a certain degree when it's man-to-man. You get bumped around, knocked around. The quarterback's going to have to wait and see. You know, and there are certain routes and things that, you know, aren't timing routes for us that we actually wait to see the eyes of a receiver on inside some of the inside stuff. But, you know, if you're looking, you know, if you're looking to evaluate, you know, timing, you know, anticipation, you know, and getting the ball out on time, that may be a way that we can help you. But, you know, we're really looking at, we want quick feet. Okay. So they can set up in the pocket, like we said, so that we can move them out of the pocket a little bit with, you know, different things that we do in the pass game on the move. And then also, you know, we would like them to come out of the pocket and be able to scramble, you know, and make the first down. You know, Brad Banks could go 60 yards for a touchdown. You know, Nate Stanley, you know, did a great job in the bowl game in a critical fourth and four situation, scrambling for a first down that really made a huge difference in the ball game. But if you scramble for a first down two or three times during the course of a game, that really puts that defense on edge, especially the secondary, you know. And that takes us back to, you know, we were talking a little bit about in the production chart, we want to look at explosive plays. Then we go to scrambles. So scramblers, you know, they come in four categories as far as I'm concerned. One is a guy who he drops back and he sees the whole rush. He sees that everything coming at him and just tries to run out of the pocket immediately. And that's all he can see. He's just running for his life, running for a little daylight, wherever it might be. The next guy is a guy who drops back, gets himself set, scrambles out of the pocket. Okay. And, you know, like the other guy just runs, doesn't even think about it. You know, the first guy, this guy's thinking about it, but he can't see anything. It's like a giant, you know, white flash in his face, and he can't quite even see what's down there. He can't find anybody. So he ends up, you know, either sticking right near the line of scrimmage or, you know, getting sacked there too. You know, the next guy can, you know, run out, you know, he can run out where the other guy, the second guy can actually, you know, he could run for a first down as well in that particular situation. Both those first two guys could. The third situation is where a guy comes, you know, out of the pocket, he sees a guy down the field. Okay. But he can't get the ball to him. Can't put it where it's supposed to go. Can't make the, you know, the adjusted throw with the angle of his arm, you know, whatever it may be. And then you have, you know, the last guy who can pretty much scramble out of the pocket. He can spot somebody down the field, and he can put the ball where he needs to put it, away from defenders, you know, and complete those balls. So then you can go back and measure, you know, we've already measured decision-making based on, you know, passing percentage, and, you know, we've, you know, and on, you know, touchdown to interception ratio, basically the quarterback rating, right, that the NFL uses. You know, I don't know if you can get involved with the yardage and, you know, things like that, you know, if you'd like. But, you know, now when you go to scramble, I'll tell you this, your passing percentage is going to be a lot less than it, you know, than it would be in a normal, in those normal situations that we talked about before. When you're scrambling, it usually drops, you know, drops down significantly. You know, most guys are only completing balls about, you know, a third, you know, even the best ones are completing, you know, balls about a third, you know, third of the time, which doesn't seem very, you know, good, right? But it's fairly significant in, you know, in scrambling situations. You can measure, you know, what they've done as far as running for first downs, throwing for first downs, explosive plays off the scramble, and you then could measure number of touchdowns, you know, off the scramble as well. All those things are going to be indicators of the physical aspects that we're talking about. You know, quick feet, quick release, arm strength. You know, so all that stuff, you know, kind of gets, you know, put in a little chart, and we rate it, and you know, we've had pretty good success working with that. But we'll have every our guys will go over with, you know, some guys that will go get every throw other than the bubbles and the, you know, throws behind the line of scrimmage, graded out and evaluated. And then we'll chart everybody that, you know, that we're recruiting in that particular year, and compare them against each other and compare them against our evaluations of them on tape as well.
I think that is a very useful system, Coach. I started using something like that around 2010 or 11, and our quarterback had graduated. We were going to have a group of sophomores, one transfer, two guys were there, compete for the job, and we based it exactly on those things you said. I charted it every day in practice. A lot of what we were looking at, and going back to Dub Maddox, is we were looking at those explosive plays. We were looking at the intermediate plays, which he calls read routes, and then the check down. So just if you were just a guy, for example, using completion rate as your number, it's not telling the whole picture, because I can drop back and throw check downs all day long and have a very high completion rate. But how many times am I moving that chain? And we would, you know, just put a section on there on a column, chain movers, percent of the throws that were chain movers, percent of the throws that were explosive. You know, I think looking at that, whether you're evaluating your own guys, even the guy who has the job already, or you're evaluating some guys you're looking to bring in, I think is a huge, huge tool. And back to my talk on Friday, I was talking about four verts and how we looked at that and thought about the different routes within there as everything was calibrated to the tenth of a second on when we wanted that ball released. And it's something, you know, you go back to the 70s and read some of Homer Smith stuff. You know, Homer Smith was big on calibrating those drops and when the ball was supposed to come out, and then working to put the receivers on the same page. And the funny thing, Coach, as you start to work with your guys and have that stopwatch on them and practice it in film, they start to actually get this internal clock that they could, you know, without looking at a stopwatch, can probably be within a tenth of a second when you say, okay, how long was that out? Because they see how their eyes and feet are moving through the progression.
Right. I mean, that's actually one of the first things I said in our talk on Friday. So sounds like, you know, we're on the same page for sure. I felt like, you know, that the same way when I sat in Dub's meeting, you know, as well. We had a guy who played for us here. His name was James Vandenberg. He started, you know, for two seasons. He had great, you know, he had great feel for the pass game and very good anticipation. James, we always give the watch in the room to the youngest guy, and they have to time it and get used to it, because they're the ones that need to build the clock in their head the most at that point in their careers. So we give that to him. And by the time he was, you know, a junior, you know, as he could almost all the time put it right on the exact, it was uncanny what he could do, you know. But you're exactly right, those guys, if you do that enough, you're building the clock in their head, okay, both in the meeting room and on, you know, and you need it to show up on the field. It doesn't do any good for you if it just shows up in the meeting room. It's got to show up in the, you know, on the field and kind of go from there. And I think one of the other critical things is, you know, while you're teaching that decision-making process. You know, in last week we talked about, hey, you know, great decisions result in big plays, like Jim Tressel said when he was at Youngstown State years ago. Well, you don't know when that big play is coming, do you? We talk about, and I took this from a guy that I worked for when I first went to Allegheny College. His name was Peter Voss. You know, he said, hey, take your profit. You know, so we talk, we talk to our quarterbacks like, look, you're in business. Okay. You're in business, you know, for our team. And you need to take your profits wherever they present themselves. Okay. And then, you know, there's no profit that's too small, because, you know, if we're running a business and we can pay all of our employees and get all of our bills paid at the end of the month, and we still have a penny in the bank or 10 bucks or whatever it is, we're still in business. Okay. And you need to stay in business. So those drop downs, the check downs that you might have, they're huge. You know, they're huge profit. You know, they're huge profits during the course of the game from, hidden yardage. So we teach, you know, when we teach progression in our pass game, we have a term called alert. You know, you can take your alert if it's there, and we, you know, teach a way to read that, obviously, and get to that point. But the alert in every pass concept is our way of taking the biggest profit. Mm-hmm. And then if that's not there, okay, we know, you know, well, it's not a heyday right now. Okay. You know, this, we're going to go back to, let's just say, read our triangle, 1, 2, 3. And so the next, you know, that next phase of what's going on is where we're going to take our next biggest profit. And then there's always a check down or slow flat or whatever it may be that ends up being, our least profitable throw. But there's also a couple things. There's one other thing that's involved that can be very profitable as well in the decision-making process, and that's a throwaway. Okay. And, we talk about throwaways can be great decisions by themselves. You know, if we're in a drive in the first quarter of a game, and we get inside the red zone, and it's third and goal from the 8, and we can't find anybody open, and Nate throws it away, we come in and kick the field goal, and we win the game in the end, 24-21. That throwaway, which ends up being a great decision that resulted in a big play on the first drive of the game. You can't underestimate those things. You know, throwaways are almost inconsequential. Incompletions are inconsequential during 2-minute drives, unless it's fourth down, right? Right. I mean, they don't hurt you necessarily. You know, don't worry about things that don't hurt you. Keep taking your profits as best you can. And keep thinking along those lines. That way guys don't get discouraged and don't let any negative thoughts, you know, enter their heads critical times during the ball game.
Coach, as we take this out onto the practice field, and certainly every single play is an opportunity to make the right decision, but, you know, working this in isolation, working it in individual time, how do you start to build that thought process into your quarterbacks and get them really thinking about not just dropping back, throwing the ball to this guy or that guy, but the whole process and making the right decision in the process?
Well, there has to be a progression, in my opinion, that is used in teaching the pass game, you know, from a fundamental standpoint and also from a scheme standpoint. And you can't go rushing through this, because if you do, you're going to end up in trouble sooner or later. And if you have to go take the time, especially, you know, mid-season or three-quarters of the way through the season, if you have to take the time to go back and start to reteach things from the ground floor up, you know, you're probably in trouble anyway. But the bottom line, there's a very distinct progression that we use, you know, when we, teach fundamentals. I'll bypass some of the fundamental progressions that we use in warming up, you know, in the throwing game. But the biggest thing that we do that probably helps us is just we do pat and go every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reason that we do it is, because tracking the football, you know, for a receiver is one of the toughest things to do. Holding his line and learning how to stack defenders, you know, those are hard things as well. Putting his foot in the ground and coming back to catch a ball at its highest point is not the easiest thing either if you're getting bodied. But, you know, we spend a lot of time, throwing pat and go. And just for timing purposes, anticipation purposes, pass game feel purposes. And, you know, we'll ask our quarterbacks to just load their back foot. We, you know, as we get started, we want the ball out early, not lead them down the field too far because they're not loose. But we ask our quarterbacks to throw the ball through the inside shoulder of the receiver, like he's on an arrow, to the outside shoulder. And that way our receivers can just track the ball over the inside shoulder to the outside shoulder, deliver. Okay, you know, they want to deliver that ball to the outside shoulder, so it keeps, you know, it keeps where? The ball outside, if the receiver's held his line, he's got his body here, okay, with 5 yards to work on the sideline, and he's got the defender inside of him. So we always have the receiver's body between the defender and the ball if we use those trajectory points. And our guys – they have done a pretty good job with that. The receiver, on the other hand, we ask him to hold his line, you know, or stack the defender, depending on, you know, what's happening. And then, okay, he wants to deliver, you know, he wants to catch the ball with late, high hands. He wants that to be as late as it can be. And his hands is high and his arms extended, elbows slightly bent, you know, but late high hands, catch that ball, put it away, fight to stay in bounds and continue down, down the field. But that's, you know, that's kind of how we have taught things. It's nothing, there's no rocket science involved, but, you know, that's been a critical, critical thing forever, I think, in developing chemistry between, quarterbacks and receivers.
Well, it's not rocket science. There's a lot of detail that you unpacked just in that pat and go drill. And I think a lot of times coaches see these drills and see it as a warm up and miss out on those opportunities to coach the little things. You know, when we ran pat and go, pre-practice, just like you, it was the same things. I mean, we had a guy out there, wasn't necessarily going to run, but was always there to be that aim point of when are you going to step back over and get on top of that guy and stack him. And just all those little things you talked about, you know, shooting the hands late, how to look for the ball, where that ball should be. Again, little things, but that drill now becomes so much more valuable. And then you build that, all those reps over the course of the preseason, over the course of the season, add spring ball in for some places, you are doing exactly what you said, really building that chemistry between the quarterbacks and receivers.
And that's, that's what's going to get you where you want to go in the end, right?
Exactly. I hope you've enjoyed the ideas and concepts shared for the quarterback decision-making process, and stay tuned for tomorrow's episode as we follow up the discussion with quarterback footwork. Be sure to check out all the things we're doing at blogs.usafootball.com. That's for our show notes, analysis articles, and other coaching articles. Follow us on Twitter at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for technique and fundamentals, footballdevelopment.com. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please go to iTunes and click 5-star review. If you have a minute or two, please leave a written review as well.
thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.